So I'm in the car with my middle son. He's 17, and we were on our way back to Columbia from a college visit. And we were looking up great majors programs in the area. He was interested, like health sciences programs, which I don't know a lot about. I'm a professor in the School of Journalism. And he was giving me all this information about programs, such and such programs the best, and it's this far away. And I was like, where are you getting all this information? Because he's just, you know, over there on the passenger seat, working on his phone like all my teenage sons do. And he was like, oh yeah, I'm using ChatGPT. I was like, that's really interesting. So where do you think ChatGPT is getting this information from? Long pause. Do you think ChatGPT is using your information to, you know, is it gathering your searches and using it in any way? Long pause. I guess the poor kid is the son of a professor, and I think that's, I should apologize to him daily. But the point of the little story is we don't know a lot about AI tools. We just know that they're available, that they're being widely used by our students, by us, by faculty and instructors at the University of Missouri. And so this is a podcast about AI critical literacy. This is a podcast that's organized by the Teaching for Learning Center at the University of Missouri. And my name is Jared Schroeder. I'm the father of the poor child in the story, and also an associate professor at the Missouri School of Journalism. My research is in free expression and emerging technology, and I'm also, as a result of all these things, probably not because of the trip I took with my son, but otherwise all these other things I've said, I'm also a faculty teaching fellow in the Teaching for Learning Center focusing on AI this semester. And this is a podcast that I'm organizing with help from all the other folks there to help us at the University of Missouri really enhance, hopefully, and support our teaching and our and what we teach our students. Just the depth of knowledge we have about artificial intelligence. I'm going to welcome my guest for this podcast episode. Her name is Tori Mondelli, and she's the director of the Teaching for Learning Center. So I'm going to welcome her and let her introduce herself more completely.
Thanks, Jared. My name is Tori Mondelli. I'm the director of the Teaching for Learning Center, and it's wonderful to have you as one of our new AI and innovation teaching fellows. I feel like you and I have been in this work together almost a year now. We both served on the MU AI Task Force for Learning and Teaching, and all of these issues relating to critical literacy were coming up there. They show up in the report. And so now I'm excited that we have these podcast episodes to record and just go a little deeper and invite guests from around the university to share with us their expertise and their interest as well.
We had great discussions during the task force meetings that weren't recorded. And some of them ended up in the report, of course. But I mean, we had some really great discussions about AI that we could sort of replicate in some ways on the podcast. So just the main purpose of this episode is to kind of introduce this, what I see as a 6-part podcast series. It's meant to be really accessible and engaging to a variety of audience members, no matter where you are. Skeptics are totally welcome. I'm kind of with them in that I have those questions too. And it's worth noting that we're going to be being guided through this process through a book titled Co-Intelligence by Ethan Mollick. And Tori, I mean, I think you're farther in the book than I am.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So Ethan Mollick and Lilac Mollick, they have just been, to me, some of the most compelling lead voices on the challenges and opportunities that we're all now confronted with Gen AI. I absolutely love the concept of co-intelligence because it's not giving it all away, right? It's that human in the loop model of critical literacy that we have to bring to anything and everything that might come out the other side of these Gen AI systems. So yeah, I'm very intrigued by the metaphors they use, the concepts. You know, a number of the principles I think are going to be nice guideposts for us. It was terrific to have Lilac with us at Teaching Renewal Week just 2 weeks ago. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that later.
I appreciate Mollick's ideas and the parts of the book I'm into so far. He's done a nice job of not being, we all have to do this. It's the perfect way. I have one way, or that is the greatest thing ever. I'm not sure I've agreed with all of his ideas so far, but that's okay. We don't have to agree with all of his ideas. It's a really good discussion book. You know, it's a book where there's a lot of room to say, well, that's one way to do that. But I have these other concerns that maybe, you know, he's coming from the Wharton School. He's coming from a business management perspective where, you know, other people from other perspectives might have say, well,
you forgot this very important thing that my field knows
Absolutely.
about, or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that right from the outset, we're emphasizing skepticism, we're emphasizing questioning. From the get-go, I mean, these LLMs are still hallucinating, right? And the source reliability issues, the mistakes, the bias, outdated information, even though it's pulling from, live web, well, a lot of websites are out of date. So, that's still with us. And then we have to also recognize that, and Malik does a good, nice job of this right in the beginning of the book, that it is not thinking the way humans think, right? It's predicting, and it has very limited interpretation abilities. It doesn't get all the nuances that humans use when we are interpreting things. It's out of step with cultural relevance and such. So I am with you. We need healthy skepticism. I would even add to that, there are a lot of very sound ethical reasons why people would want to be objectors, conscientious objectors. And I'm really happy, with the contributions that our task force made to kind of point that out and ask faculty to be flexible with students. If you're going to require an assignment or something like that, how about some options for students who just don't want to go there?
Well, the next thing I want to get to is talking about definitions. And so you already sort of brought up, like, when we say AI, when we say AI literacy, when we say AI critical literacy, what are we talking about? And bringing up the idea that the training of these tools affecting what we see and what we know, that's a really good example of the AI literacy, is what I'm thinking when I say AI literacy is understanding what the limitations of the tools are. Like, what do they know? What do they not know? Who's programming them? And like, what are the, I think a lot of us have struggled with what social media did, thinking that social media is recreating like a public space for democratic discourse, but it's not. It's a corporate space for corporate managed discourse, which I'm not attacking these folks, but it's important that you just know what it is. And that's what
Right.
I was
Oh,
thinking.
yeah.
So, I mean, the next question I had on here, Torian, this gets right into that same question, is when was the first time you used AI? I just thought that'd be a good way of thinking about how to define it.
Well, maybe it was kind of, silly or very safe uses. I remember getting onto ChatGPT, and I knew I could use it in a way that was different from Google, just Googling something. So I asked it for a recipe, but I wanted it to search my local favorite grocery stores here in Colombia and pull on some of the sales, so just kind of a personal shopping list, a recipe, and I felt really heartened by what it produced, and that was interesting. I was like, okay, we have something beyond Google now.
I think it comes down to how we define. The reason I was asking about that, and I've got ChatGPT on my list too, but like how we define AI will affect how we answer the question, when was the first time you used AI?
Oh, good point.
Because I was thinking, like, I have ChatGPT on the list, but I think in my first book, I was writing about, somehow I was writing about Eliza, who is generally considered the first kind of AI, like a chatbot. It was a therapy chatbot. And I remember playing with that, maybe almost 10 years ago. It's from the 60s. It's been around a long time, but there's on the internet, you can find versions of it. So I had difficulty even answering the question, when was the first time I used AI? I mean, when we put a Google search in, does that count? It's a series of algorithm-based decisions, and AI tools are also constructed of algorithms. So I think the definition, it can be more difficult than we think to define it.
Yes. I might just be oversimplifying because for me, I felt that there was a moment 2 years ago, with generative AI and kind of just using those bots, those chat GPT and Gemini and Claude and, those. So to me, that's felt very different from Google in its capabilities.
It absolutely is, right? And I think that's a really good point, that you bringing up the ChatGPT is a really good answer, because really, I think on this podcast, we're talking mostly about the general generative AI. We're talking about the revolution, I feel like, that happened starting in, I think, fall 2022, when ChatGPT showed up into our lives. It'd been around for a few years,
Yes, that you're using the word revolution is so intriguing. Can we call it an uneven revolution, right? Because there are participants, and then there are people who are just not participating, and for lots of different reasons. That's
I guess that I'm thinking of as a, how about a shift in the flow of information and ideas that we will probably go back and put our finger on and say, when did that happen? Oh, it happened in fall 2022 when ChatGPT released this model to the public, right? It was, they had developed it in prior iterations, not to the public. It had been winning chess matches and things like that. So maybe revolution is the wrong word. I'm glad that you pointed that out.
No, I like it. Let's roll with it, because I think you're putting your finger on, yes, that it's a dramatic moment.
Good or
Things
bad, I'm not
are,
celebrating it. I'm just like,
no,
this one.
right, but the paradigm has shifted.
Right, paradigm's a good word too.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I mean, as someone who studies the flow of information and ideas in society, like ChatGPT or the generative AI revolution that we're defining here, I mean that can change everything for the flow of ideas. That idea that there's for the first time a non-human speaker. Lots of people point to other, like, oh, it's another technology. We had the telegraph, or we had the internet, or like, oh, yeah, those are huge, life-changing, world-changing technologies, but none of them included a non-human entity engaging in discourse with humans. And so it's a big deal. So I guess in this podcast, trying to frame what we're talking about, we are really, I think, focusing on generative AI. There are definitely other forms of AI, but I think our main goal is generative AI and as it applies, of course, within the context of teaching. This is a teaching-related podcast. We're going to get to the literacy part in a second. One definition I found of generative AI, it said intelligence that matches or exceeds that of humans, tools that are not programmed to do a single task like a chess-playing machine. They're programmed to make decisions and provide information based on requests. They're not limited in their spectrum of answers like a chess-playing machine might have been, or even like Eliza. She was very She, it's funny, I'm giving human-like qualities to it. Eliza was given only had a limited set of possible answers. And whereas certainly we could argue generative AI is limited based on its training, but the training is so expansive that it can still kind of surprise you. And that's one of the things I do like about it, is it will surprise me sometimes if I.
Yes, and is it fair to say also that, it's that training data, but now it's all over the internet. So it also has like real time data and information that it's working with too, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of there's also one of the things my students when we did an assignment about AI controlling information in my grad class last spring, they argued that the corporations involved with the AI tools seem to have a lot to do with what you would tell what they the answers to the questions I gave them to ask it would at what it give. So it's not just the training data, it's like the guardrails that the corporations put in place, whether it's for their benefit or just to protect them from legal liability. They've interpreted the rules. So I don't want to get too into the weeds about that. But anyway, so we're trying to establish that generative AI is the main focus, and this is a and but this is also a literacy or a critical literacy podcast. So what do we mean by literacy? I guess I'm being a nerdy academic who has to define all the terms. What do we mean by this?
I'm with you.
But it feels like we should in this first episode say what do we mean? Because really, AI and literacy have a broad spectrum of possible definitions. So, critical literacy or literacy, I was looking up me. There's not a lot of research done about AI literacy, really. It's maybe I'm not making it up, but there's not been a lot published so far. But media literacy, there's a lot. So, the media literacy definitions seem to make a lot of sense for AI, though. It said the ability to critically analyze stories presented in the mass media and to determine their accuracy or credibility. So I would just change it to the ability to critically analyze AI responses or AI information presented to audience members to determine its accuracy or credibility as a potential definition.
The only thing I would take issue with is that word audience, because if we are going to work with the Gen AI as a co-intelligence, we're not audience, right? We're co-designers, we're co-creators.
So
And
user.
I love that definition in general.
So maybe instead of audience, it'd be user.
Yeah, user.
Or the co intelligence. If we say we're the co-intelligence, I feel like
co-design.
we're giving equal authorship to the AI, and maybe we should, I don't know, but I pause and be like, well, I'm co-intelligent. Who's in charge here? Because like you and I are co-doing the podcast. I don't know.
Well, I would argue that, we want to empower students and support our, our colleagues in our community to say, you are always in charge. Don't give that away.
Don't give that away.
So maybe we can call it an assistant. The AI, think of it as an assistant. In the book Co-Intelligence, I am really intrigued by Malik. You've probably gotten this far in the book, right? Where he talks about you want to view it as an alien, that it's, and almost, combining that idea with with a very eager intern or graduate student who is super brilliant, very eager, but needs mentoring, needs guidance, so that kind of a
Yeah,
way
that's
to think
helpful.
about it.
So, I mean, I think AI literacy relates to the ability to recognize AI information, the ability to recognize the weaknesses and strengths of that information, the ability to understand the systems that created these tools. We don't all need to be computer programmers. And that's one of the things I was excited about AI literacy is I'm not a science nerd. Like, I'm a different kind of nerd, but like, I'm not programming anything. I'm not interested in knowing how to program. There's a lot of folks that are talking about the nuts and bolts of AI. Good for them, right? But I care about information and the flow of ideas. So the literacy aspect, and I mean, it's selfishly for my own, I have to engage with AI somehow in my own classes. I have to tell my students, it's not just literacy in terms of how to use it, it's literacy in terms of how to teach about it, right? What do our students need to know about these tools? So maybe I don't want to use AI in my class in a certain way, and that's cool, but I also have to tell my students how AI is being used in their field and talk to them about understanding how the tool works in the sense that they know how to make the right decisions based on the uses of those tools. So there's a lot of layers to, I think, what we're trying to do here with AI literacy.
Agreed. And as learners now, right, this is new for all of us. It's kind of a vulnerable space, I think, for educators, because we have to keep up, and it's changing every day. It's difficult, and that's why the Teaching for Learning Center, we've really kind of pivoted to make this one of our chief goals, to be there for campus, to be there for people who want to think through this. Jared, you've mentioned, why you care about this so much. I like to share a little bit. Like, for me, I care about AI critical literacy because I think without it, we are going to lose track or lose traction in really making sure that our students are learning in our degree programs, in our general education curriculum. If we're just kind of loose about, oh, sure, you can use AI on any assignment and this and that, like there's a real danger here. Students then will have carte blanche to just offload the necessary practice they need with thinking, with growing their own skills and knowledge base. So yeah, there's a lot at stake.
And they'll only know what the AI knows, which based on its training,
Correct.
or what the AI wants them to know, because it has to make a lot of decisions on what to present to you. You know,
Yeah.
it's like there's a lot of cool services on campus, and we're not the only ones that do it, but where you can have the library just pull a book for you. I never use that because I want to see the books around the book I want, right? I'll go looking around, I'm going to run into some books I didn't expect, the unexpected book. And I'm afraid sometimes the AI. So you tell the AI, I want to know this thing, and it tells you. And it doesn't, you don't ever have the experience of discovery.
Agreed. And but that's been around since Google too, right?
That's true.
Like, you're so old school. I love it. That's how I am too. And so I used to call you browse the library, you browse a bookstore. But yeah, that's kind of getting taken away from us. And we have to think about new ways to preserve that, to help students not just take a short linear route, but to open themselves up to possibilities.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of layers here. It's almost too many layers, but there's a lot of layers. And that's why there's five more episodes after this that actually get into more detail. They're all guided by the Moloch book. And so I'm kind of dividing them. Like the next podcast episode is about covers the introduction in chapter one of his book. It's not saying that we only talk about his book. It just kind of gives us the jumping off point to have a discussion about the different topics that he discusses. So the next episode, for example, really grounds the AI, the alien concept, the potential role it's supposed to have in society and with individuals, and in this case, our teaching. And I mean, Moloch's not, he is a professor, but this is not a teaching book necessarily. It's an AI how to work with AI book that we're pulling in as an AI literacy resource for us. Oh, you know what I wanted to ask you, Tori, is critical literacy. So I had initially pitched this as literacy, and you added very smartly, and I agreed 100%, the idea of calling it critical literacy. Can you explain briefly what you mean, what the difference you see between critical literacy and regular literacy?
Yes, thanks, Jared. And I was inspired a couple of weeks ago. I attended a webinar by that Leon Fursey, who he's from the UK, but he's based in Australia. He's one of the co-authors of the AI assessment scale and the AI assessment scale revisited. So they're already up to their second version of it. And I love the work that he and his colleagues are doing, very thoughtful. His background is literacy. And he really made the distinction that resonated with me. He said, sometimes when people just are talking about literacy, it can be interpreted as, and I'm paraphrasing, kind of like this just functional level, like how to use AI, how to log on, how to come up with a prompt, and like make it work. And what we're really talking about, educators, is critical literacy, where students and users that we're actually interrogating the technology as we're using it, that we're then also engaging students and colleagues in meaningful conversations around what it's doing, what it's not doing, what it's, So I just feel like, we want to make sure that people know that we're not just talking about surface level, of some kind of like tech training on get yourself literate and using this new AI tool. No, we're talking about the deeper stuff here.
Yeah, and that made complete sense to me. It's almost like a Bloom's taxonomy of when I think about what I want my students to learn. It's I don't want this basic regurgitation. I want to give people tools that they can apply in the future because, like I said at the beginning, the technology is going to change. The ChatGPT, I don't know what it's going to be 5 years from now. It might be like MySpace or, Friendster or whatever that we laugh about now because it's so old. I'm so glad we defined that, but I was just going to outline that we are going to guide the rest of the book or the rest of the podcast with these sections of the book. Now, I wanted to note that the Teaching for Learning Center can help people access the Moloch book if they would like.
Yes, we have some copies. Come on by. I think, maybe we have something like 15 or 20 copies left. So if you're one of the lucky ones, you can pop in and visit with our reception. We'd be happy to get that in your hands. And I should mention it's been on the New York Times bestseller list now for quite a bit. People are
Yeah,
enjoying it.
pretty accessible probably outside of the, if they can't get a Teaching for Learning Center as well. I just thought we could end with just one. I wanted people to leave with, I want to make sure the first episode of the podcast isn't just about what's going to come up in the next podcast. I want there to be some meat to it. And so I wanted to ask one big thinking question before we leave and let people get back to their lives. And that is, and this is so open-ended, and I think it's the answer to this question could be really developing as we go through the podcast, but it's just like the first day of class. I like to at least get my students thinking about communication law, and then we'll come back and add detail later and hopefully inform their answers in the future. But anyway, the question I was thinking about was how should AI critical literacy be taught at universities? I don't know if there's a more vague general question anybody could ever
That's a
ask.
big question. I like it. Big, big question.
So I don't, wrong, it's not wrong answers only, but incomplete answers, I think, are okay because, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, we're all trying to work together here. This isn't a top-down podcast. It's a I'm Learning With You podcast. So what, how would you think about that, Tori?
Right. Well, first thing that comes to mind is academic freedom. So I would say that, in this moment, there are will be colleagues who say, I'm not going to do it. and I think in this moment, they could have a lot of good reasons why they're not going to do it, right? So I just want to just set us up here that there's, I think, room and space for lots of positions on this. So now, assuming that there are people who want to teach AI critical literacy at universities, I'm in the camp that I think we do owe it to our students to do that. I think that, the world is changing rapidly. So learning for learning's sake, I think there's the argument that, we need to do it for that reason, but also to help them be successful in a dynamic world. So as if they go on to graduate school, if they're going into the military, if they're going into the workforce in all kinds of different sectors, like it seems like if we don't do this, what? So okay, but your question is how should we teach it? I think the best way for that to be figured out is at the degree program level. I think that collectively, professors and others who are teaching in the degree program really need to set aside time to have deep, meaningful exploration of that. Could it also go in our general education curriculum? Sure. It's always tight space. It's difficult. But just at the real basic level, when incoming first year students are start engaging with us, what do we want to know them to know at the outset? So I would say there's something to be said about everybody getting basic critical literacy grounding, but then to really make it applicable, relevant, and helpful in the program, the academic program, that gets me excited. And I know we're already doing that at MU, from different conversations with colleagues around the university. What do you think?
I'm asking the same question to myself as I get my courses ready. I mean, I just did that for this semester, but thinking so far it's been a weaving approach. For my field, we haven't, that's, I think it's probably for a lot of fields this way. There has not been an established set of ethics or guidelines that have, this is the way we're going to do this in our field. I've been weaving it into my class. I've been, say I'm lecturing about a concept, I'll ask ChatGPT about the concept or Gemini or one of the tools. I'll ask it to explain the concept and I'll put its answer up on the screen and I'll be like, hey guys, we just covered this. Can you tell me, do you feel like the AI got it right here? And so I'm trying to show students that they should question the answers they get from the AI and that should be critical, to be critical of the answers. And sometimes the AI nails it and we agree as a class, man, they got it right. And sometimes it gets off track. And it gives me a teaching opportunity to say, these are the concepts I was trying to get to you. And look here, it's off here. And it's what it should say. So I'm trying to embed that, question these tools, don't assume they're always right. So I guess that's been my approach so far. I'm not sure it's right, but it is to incorporate the AI tools, but to question them.
Sounds like an extremely sound approach, and it also makes me think of the deep learning principle. We'll call it elaboration, where you might get an answer from a student, from an AI, right? And then as teachers, how do we get them to go deeper, and really elaborate and give some more examples or problematize something or put it in a different context, these kinds of ways where we're strengthening their understanding and growing their understanding. So I love what you're doing, and I think it's fertile ground for even taking students deeper.
It helps that I teach conceptual classes and not, I mean, if I was teaching a practice class, it would be different, but it's a conceptual class, so it's a conceptual approach, I guess, to it. But I definitely want to model that they can question it and that it's not always right, and that maybe it's co-intelligence, that they should be working with it like we talked about earlier. So I hope this has been a really good just starting point for the podcast. And I just enjoy having the conversation with you, Tori. We're
Me
recording it for a
too.
podcast, but this is, I'm growing just from sitting through the podcast. I'm just by doing this, I'm devoting time from our busy schedules, just like all the other faculty and instructors on campus, devoting time to thinking about this thing that deserves some attention.
Yes, and thank you so much, Jared, for having the idea and leading us with this. I think there are many colleagues who want to engage and kind of grow their own thinking and skills around this, and they may not have a day to come to a conference or an hour to come to a workshop. So I love that this is a podcast that people can, put on and do other things even while they're listening, because we are all so busy. So it's just another format that's hopefully going to be helpful and useful to people.
So that was Tori Mondelli, the director of the Teaching for Learning Center at the University of Missouri. And this is a wrap on episode one of the AI Critical Literacy Podcast.